And then we had the work song. That was the Mads Tolling Trio off a new album, Speed of Light. And we're going to go out with Miles Davis doing Blue on Green.
Yes, and I'm just trying to remember, before I push the magic button, should I be on track 8 or what? Can you tell me, Francis?
I don't know that I
can tell you.
Okay, what would it be?
Track 3.
On my CD?
Correct.
Oh.
No.
Can you tell? Hold
seven.
On, folks.
Seven. Eight. Seven.
Seven. All right. Okay. All right.
We are out of here. Jeff is here, and we'll see you next month. Have a good one and enjoy the wonderful weather.
Happy Valentine's Day,
absolutely.
Everybody.
Here we go.
It's 9 o'clock and you're listening to WSCALP, Portsmouth Community Radio, and it is time for Right Here, Right Now.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
And I always like to say that on Friday morning. We do have a rendezvous with destiny. We have it every Friday morning. Right Here, Right Now. Please note that the views expressed on this program are those of the individuals who speak them and not necessarily a Portsmouth Community Radio, its board of trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. And programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is brought to you by our members and in part by Blue Star Taxi, Regal Limousine, Front Porch Restaurant and Piano Bar, Dan Belafonte Investments, and Daystar Computer Services. We thank you for your support. And that is our theme song, Watching the World Wake Up from History, which is always a good thing to do. Once again, you're listening to Right Here, Right Now. Heard every Friday morning from 9 until 10 in the morning. And this week we have a busy show. We're going to talk about liberty, and we're going to talk about the original intent of some of our documentations that we sometimes take for granted, such as the Declaration of Independence. We're also going to talk about just general things that somehow we have forgotten as a country. And our guest today is a gentleman by the name of Pastor Garrett Lear from the Well of the Living Water. And he's also known as the Patriot Pastor. Pastor, how are you this morning?
Well, I'm doing great. I saw the sunrise and the beautiful mountains of New Hampshire, and now we're down on the seacoast, and it's my pleasure to be here.
Oh, great. So today, also just to let you know, at the end of the show, we are going to do another segment of We the People. Today's We the People, though, is a little bit different. We're going to talk about the Gettysburg Address, and we're going to be talking about that because over the next week, we're actually celebrating two important birthdays, the birth of George Washington, the father of our country, and also Abraham Lincoln. And yesterday was Abraham Lincoln's bicentennial, and much has been said about that. So I thought it would be really neat if we ended the show today with the Gettysburg Address. Now, Pastor, I'm going to play a few clips, actually. Recently, you had the pleasure, and I say the pleasure, of speaking at Faneuil Hall.
That's
and
true.
What was that like? I mean, to be in that cradle of independence and liberty.
All I can say is the phrase goosebumps. And people who have ever had goosebumps should certainly recognize, you know, what that does to you overall. But standing on the very platform where John Adams, Samuel Adams, Paul Revere, James Otis, Dr. Warren, all the people involved in the foundation of our country, to stand on the same platform at the same pulpit or podium and to look out over that. And for me, having 388 years of ancestry in this country, to know that my ancestors, and I'm directly related to some of the people who were on that platform and in that room, and to say, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing about the War for American Independence. And I hope, Jeff, that our listeners pay close attention that I didn't say the Revolutionary War. It's often known as that. But the War for American Independence has really not stopped. It doesn't stop because the whole issue of human nature, the things that people go through, that doesn't stop. So we're still in that.
And I think a lot of people misunderstand that after the War for Independence, many people feel that was it. We are a country, we move on, and there's really not a lot we in modern society can do to kind of keep that movement alive, or even if we necessarily have to keep that movement alive. And you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you as a guest is, you know, having heard you speak, and we're going to talk to, you know, many of your speeches are available on the web, and I would encourage people to go ahead and search those out, and particularly the Faneuil Hall one back in December. But there is this lack of passion from many Americans now that you seem to possess, and maybe I'm just an old softy because I just really love this country, and to the point where I read the Constitution constantly. I read the Declaration of Independence at least once a year as my connection back to everything that our founding fathers wanted to make sure that we protected and saved. And yet you seem to so elegantly be able to articulate what many of us have forgotten. And I mean, where does that passion come from?
Well, first of all, you just mentioned the word love and loving your country. First of all, you know, I always start off by saying, I'll have no other king but King Jesus. My first love is for Christ himself, my Savior. But I also have a deep abiding love for the original intent of my native land. This is my native land. I've had people come to me and say, you know, America's too far gone and we've lost this, we've lost that. We're moving to Costa Rica. You know what I tell them, Jeff? I said, get out of my face. I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to be around you. Why do I need to leave my country? I love this country. I've ministered and traveled through all 50 states, all the way up into Barrow, Alaska. I've gone to the easternmost, the northernmost, the westernmost, and the southernmost parts of America. This is a beautiful land. And we have opportunities here that people have never had in the history of the world. And anyone that knows about the War for American Independence, and let's say, for example, the Battle of Lexington, April 19, 1775, they said that was the shot heard around the world, that what they were doing was for the cause of mankind. And it's interesting, and I've traveled outside the United States a few times, and there are people who want to know Why have we been so prosperous? Why have we had personal freedoms? Most countries don't have constitutions, or if they have constitutions, they're there to subject the people to a tyrannous government. It's the reverse of that in America, and I had this discussion last night a little bit concerning the issue of people who are from England. If you're from England, you're a subject of the crown. You belong to the government.
Absolutely, still.
And
people don't realize it. And it's funny how you, that contract, the Constitution and some of the other documents. But, you know, and you mentioned around the world, many constitutions are formed to tell the people what the government is going to do to them. And you even have countries like New Zealand that is just thinking now that they need a constitution. New Zealand doesn't have a constitution. And we in America have really taken this document for granted and how important it is in our everyday lives, as long as we hold on to the true word of it.
You know, let's get back to the word passion that you put there. I mean, people, if you ever watch a football game, you know, somebody's down at the Patriots or somebody's, I mean, I was at a Red Sox game. You want to talk about passion? There's people getting passionate about a game that probably, you know, in a couple of weeks, they don't even remember who played or won. But they don't get passionate about things that are affecting them. I'm passionate because it affects me personally and my family that I love, but also affects my grandson because they're our posterity. And so being passionate also comes from, just like what you were saying, Jeff, about reading the documents. When I read these, and I've been a student of history all my life. I started reading at 4 years of age. Before I went to the first grade, I had already read 12 very hard books, and they were all nonfiction, mostly historical and biographies and so forth. So I can become passionate when I read these things because I understand what they mean. I honestly understand what these documents mean to the freedom of mankind, and I want people to be free. I believe freedom is the best thing.
And that's a really good point. Now, I'm going to play a clip for you, and I'm going to ask you a few questions about this. Now, once again, I'm going to play some clips from a recent speech that Pastor Lear did down in Faneuil Hall, and it was in December during that horrendous ice storm and everything like that, and we'll talk a little bit about that experience. But let's go ahead and play clip one.
You and I have a rendezvous.
And that would be clip one on this side.
Introduce a fellow son of the American Revolution, Reverend Garrett Lear.
I will have no other king but King Jesus.
Now, I play that clip, and I'll tell you why. And you start out many of your speeches that way, and you mention it throughout your speeches, and you also have it in many of your writings. And I think at some point people are very confused about our Christianity as it relates to our country. And could you explain a little bit to our listeners, when you make that statement, what exactly are you proclaiming, really?
Well, everybody has an allegiance to somebody or something. For me personally, when I make the statement, I'm showing that my allegiance is first and foremost to Christ. But also, from a historical perspective, one of the most foremost sayings during the War for American Independence was, "We will have no other king but King Jesus." Because remember, we had a king at that time. The War for American Independence was not a war of foreign aggression. We were fighting against our own government. We were British subjects. We had a king named King George III who believed that he was a divine right king. So the statement was made, we have King Jesus. We'll honor the king as much as he is a civil magistrate, but when he goes beyond what a civil magistrate is supposed to do in terms of English common law, in terms of biblical law, in terms of what the Bible says in Romans 13, for example, of what civil government is supposed to do, then we not only have a right, but we have a responsibility to stand up and say, wait a minute, you aren't a divine right king. You don't own us. And so it's a historical significance, and it goes all the way back to the birth certificate of our country, which many people think I'm talking about the Declaration, but actually the Declaration is just that. It's a Declaration of Independence. It's not really the birth certificate of our country, and July 4th isn't really necessarily the birthday of our country. It really is November 11th, 1620, the signing of the Mayflower Compact. That is really the birth certificate, and that makes Plymouth, in a sense, the birthplace of America. And our founding fathers fully understood that. They looked at many of the things that happened during that period of time, the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut, 1630, and incorporated these things in the Declaration, incorporated these things in the Constitution. So many people today, because they do not want to believe that Christianity is significant in our society, have just wanted to write off Christ and write off the Bible and write off these historical underpinnings. This is not only is it incorrect, it's also un-American. Because for an atheist, a document like the Declaration of American Independence, or for that matter, somebody who even is of a particular religion other than those that believe in the God of the Bible, well, then they don't have an unalienable rights. Because according to the document, and with a large C, it says they've been endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Now, this is very important on a governmental standpoint. If you ask the majority of Americans today, if we left this studio and went out onto Islington Street and stopped the people walking by, excuse me, where do your rights come from? Do you know that probably today I would be surprised that 75, maybe more, percent of the people would say, from the government? But that is absolutely false.
It is.
You see, God has endowed us with these inalienable rights. And, you know, we all know what liens are. Today we hear about this in the news all the time. What about the lien on your house? That's called a mortgage. You don't pay it, you lose your house. You don't pay the lien on your car, you get repoed, right? You know, in the middle of the night, they jerk your car.
Oh, absolutely.
But these are rights given by our Creator, and they cannot have a lien put on them. So they're not privileges given by government. And here's, when you say, I'll have no other king but King Jesus. King Jesus doesn't have bad hair days. King George III, he had bad hair days. King George III actually went through a period of mental illness where they practically tortured it out of him with bleeding and all kind of other stuff. He had a lot of bad hair days, and he had a bad hair day. You could be hung because he didn't like what you had to say. He didn't consider that you had inalienable rights given to you by a creator.
And you know, that's a really important statement. I think many of our listeners, because we have listeners from many different venues.
Sure.
And they're listening to this, and there's this apprehension to connect our country with our Christian faith. And you often hear, and I know that you've heard this before, that, you know, America was not founded as a Christian nation. And you mentioned the Mayflower Compact. And one of the statements out of that compact that I always found very interesting was the city, the Shining City on the Hill, which was later used by Ronald Reagan, and which most recently was used by President Barack Obama. That is not an arbitrary statement. That when they made that statement back in the 1600s, during the Mayflower Compact, and now it has been used over and over again, there is a Christian perspective to that statement, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, what you're talking about is the 1630 speech of Governor John Winthrop.
Very good. Thank you.
Now, the interesting point about this, in the way that we come to know things, and there's a biblical premise here in Matthew chapter 6, verses 16 and 20. It says, know them by the fruit they bear. Okay? Well, read the documents, read that speech, and in the speech, this is 10 years after the signing of the Mayflower Compact, knowing how people are, this is John Winthrop trying to remind them, for we must consider that we shall be as a city upon a hill. The eyes of all people are upon us. Now get that. They thought that all the eyes of the people of the world are upon them, because this was quite an experiment in self-government, quite an experiment of starting a new country. Actually, one of the few countries of the world that declared from the beginning, our start is, and if you read the Mayflower Compact, to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to this continent. See, I am not a revisionist historian. There's things about America and things that have been done that I'm not pleased with.
Right.
But I still report them as they happened. And I put that to journalists. Are you really a journalist, or are you just a spin doctor? If you're a journalist, you report what happened as best that you can understand it. Now, they said, or John Winthrop said in that document, that, beloved, there is now set before us life and good, death and evil, in that we are commanded this day to love the Lord our God, and to love one another, and to walk in his ways and keep his commandments. Now, listen to this one, Jeff. and his laws and the articles of our, here it comes, covenant with him. The Mayflower Compact, that was a covenant. By today's wording, we'd say a contract. And that we may live and be multiplied, and that the Lord our God may bless. Therefore, let us choose life, and that we and our seed, that's posterity, that's all of us, we're the seed of those folks even today, even if you don't have their blood in your veins, by obeying his voice and cleaving to him, for he is our life and our prosperity.
And it's interesting, and so we're talking right now, just to remind everybody, we're talking with Pastor Garrett Lear of the Well of the Living Water, also known as the Patriot Pastor, and I want to ask you how you got that name in a minute. The purpose of today's show is really, once again, we talked about that passion, how some of us have lost it, but also for us to reconnect or remind people that there have been attempts over the last 50 to 100 years to really remove things or understanding of our Christian foundation for this nation and replace it with secular kind of philosophies. And what I want to do is I want to go back to the Faneuil Hall speech. I want to play something because one of the documents that many people misunderstand is the Constitution. They point to that document and say, well, just the mere fact that the Lord is not mentioned in that, or the Creator isn't mentioned like it is in the Declaration of Independence, is a clear example that we are not a Christian nation. And I want to play a statement that you made regarding Benjamin Franklin.
As Benjamin Franklin said in the Constitutional Convention of 1787, he said, "I have lived, sir, a long time. And the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of man. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid?"
Now, that was at the Constitutional Convention, and clearly he is talking about our Christian understanding and how important it was in that hall and during the discussions. Do you think at some point many people who, for whatever reason, are trying to take the Constitution and clearly state Christ does not belong in America, it is really a secular nation, where do you think that comes from?
Well, first of all, it comes from a misunderstanding, a very gross misunderstanding, and it also comes from the worst traitors America have ever had, and they call revisionist historians. There are people who are pagans and people that are heathens and people that are atheists and whatever they identify themselves as, is saying, you know, I'd like America a lot better if it didn't have these things. You can't have the Constitution without having the Declaration of American Independence, because the Constitution came from the Declaration. Now, you mentioned about people saying that the Constitution doesn't have anything about Christ in it. Well, first of all, our founding fathers never expected that we were going to have a country where atheists and even agnostics, for that matter, or pagans or heathens would rise up and try to say that America didn't have a Christian heritage. They never really expected that. But they also were not trying to come up with a religious document. They already had that. It was called the Bible. And they already had other foundational documents that certainly had those underpinnings. They wanted to have something that could be agreed upon. And here's what happened at the Constitutional Convention. And as a born in Massachusetts, raised in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, I am a native New Englander, a northern New Englander, through and through, okay, as much as I've lived across the country. Take us, who basically have our Puritan background, that have our New England way, and mix us in with a bunch of Southerners. Try it, even today. And then say, okay, we're going to lock you all up, so to speak, in one room, and we're going to come to a consensus on something. Now, add to that, we're going to take some Episcopalians, some Baptists, some Lutherans, some Presbyterians, a smattering of Roman Catholics, and a few others, and we're going to put you all in one room, and we're going to ask you to come up with something that you can all agree with. The reason that Benjamin Franklin said those words was because there was arguments going on. He actually, in the middle of summer, said, we need to close the windows because there are people. There were people outside the convention hall there in Philadelphia listening in. They wanted to know, what are you going to give us? What's going to happen here? Benjamin Franklin, as being grandpa, you know, he was up in his 80s at the time, he said, you know what? Close the windows. I don't want the people out there hearing us argue like that. They'll lose confidence in us as leaders that we don't know what we're doing. And then he said, you remember how we won this war, that we signed this peace treaty in 1783? It's because of the hand of God, divine providence on this nation. We shouldn't have won because we didn't have the troops. We didn't have the money. We didn't have the experience. We won because the Lord helped us. And that's the help we need right now. So, guys, I'm going to pull rank on you. I'm an old guy. Get on your knees and let's pray. And let's pray to the same one who George Washington prayed to.
And you and I, and many of our listeners and people that we associate with feel very comfortable talking this way. It is our connection and our understanding as we know it based on studying the documents and feeling that passion still. But there are people listening right now, Pastor, who think, you know, who are you or who am I or who is anyone else to tell me that if we were to take Christ out of this country, if we were to remove that understanding of how important our relationship with Christ as a country is, that it's going to affect us in any way or it's going to be bad for America. And, I mean, what do you say to people like that? Because I'm sure you have people walk up to you occasionally and say, you know, love to speak, great passion, but you know what? If Christ is not part of America, we'll still be okay.
Well, you know, I'm laughing because you're saying occasionally people come up and say that to me. I mean, I'm out in the public. A lot of times I spoke at the Live Free or Die Festival where half the people there are avowed atheists and they were in open gun carry. You know, they're in Jaffrey. But you know, the interesting thing, many of them came up to me afterwards and said, nobody has ever explained this to us. I'm not the one saying this. I mean, just like we're sitting here today, I'm not expressing opinions.
Sure.
I've been reading quotes. So I'd have to say to somebody, and this reminds me of a talk show I was on out of Texas back about a year ago. A fella called in and said, I don't agree with you. I said, well, I'm used to that, but explain to me in what part you don't agree with me. Well, first of all, you think that Jesus is the only way, the only truth, and the only life. I said, sir, I was quoting John chapter 14, verse 6 from the Bible. I didn't make that up, and I didn't write it. I happen to agree with it, and I know it's true, but I didn't write it. Then he said, and I don't agree with you that we have the same creator. Oh, really? I said, well, I was reading from the Declaration of American Independence, and they only have one creator that's mentioned there, and I am absolutely sure that all of them who signed it, that were Christians, and I know people have their attitudes, I can debunk a lot of the myths about some of our signers, believed in the God of the Bible, capital C, creator. See, that's not my opinion. I'm just giving you historical facts. I'm sorry that you don't like those things. And here's what atheists need to understand. Here's what even other people of different religions or no religions or heathens have to understand. In most of the countries of the world, do you think that unbelievers who are called infidels do very well in Iran? Do you think atheists do well in Saudi Arabia with Wahhabis? Excuse me. In America, these people have been able to prosper because we have said equal rights for all, special rights for none. And so those are some principles that have been bought for them by the blood of others and because of Christian truth according to Scripture. We don't impose our values. I'm not imposing values on anybody. But you see, these very same people are up there at the National Congress, excuse me, or at the legislature, imposing their values on us. And especially knowing that those values, we've seen historically, this isn't the first time that a country has had atheists or heathens or pagans or people into witchcraft. This has been going on throughout man's history. And we know where it leads to.
And, you know, that's a really interesting point, too, is that, you know, oftentimes when people have this debate and trying to understand the original intent, what you will often hear is that Christians and try to impose their beliefs on other people. And as kind of a trained observer, somebody who likes to look at things and try to get to the heart of why they are happening, in my life, what I have seen is just the opposite. It is never Christianity trying to impose itself on other people. It has been over my lifetime. In my lifetime, I've seen prayer removed from school. I have seen, the debate within school itself as to what things can be taught and what things can be said. And it always seems the people spearheading this cause are the ones wanting to not only remove Christianity from its understanding in America, but impose their own beliefs. And it's just counter to what they always use as an argument.
Well, that's true. And it really is anarchy.
Oh, exactly.
It is a type of anarchy, though most people would not even recognize the word. You see, I believe that God has created the heavens and the earth, that he has a way that he wants us to live. Let's just say that's his righteous order. Some have described it as the natural laws, as it is in our declaration. There is a way that people are supposed to live. And when men are left to themselves, which there was a scriptural period of time in the book of Judges where it said that men did what was right in their own sight, and it was called chaos. It was a type of anarchy, because if everyone makes it up themselves, you know, and I've heard many debates, many people have talked to me, whatever they call themselves, and these days the names conservative, liberal, libertarian, Republican, Democrat, whatever, those things don't make much difference to me, because right. I'm not even sure I even understand what any of those things are anymore. That they're so fuzzy around the edges, so to speak. You know, the issue is when somebody says, well, I can be trusted. I said, you can be trusted? I just saw you not let somebody pass you by at a stop sign. You forced yourself into the intersection, and you think you can be trusted. You see, the issue is America was built on the idea of self-government. But self-government, that's sort of a misnomer in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
It was presupposed, and our second president, John Adams, said that this Constitution only works. Hear this, folks. I know this is going to hurt a lot of people's feelings. He said it only works for a moral and religious people. And when they believed religious, they were using the terminology meaning the various different types of Christianity, in part that's what they were pretty much talking about. Well, if that's the case, then the person that says, what's this self-government? It means you let the Lord govern your life because you follow his precepts, just like we read in John Winthrop's speech, and his commands and his ways. And if you won't do that, somebody else is going to have to tell you. And, you know, many of these people, I ask them, did you ever raise any children? I mean, I've raised quite a bit of children, and we've had foster children. I want to tell you something. It was a revelation to me, sort of an epiphany. I was in the hospital in Alaska with one of our daughters who had to go back into the hospital, and she's just a little bitty baby, and she's in the bassinet thing that they had for her, and she's shrieking. And I looked and I said, wait a minute. We only had her for a couple of days. I didn't teach her to throw a temper tantrum. Where'd she get that from? See, we end up having to teach our children to do what is right. We tell them, don't be selfish. Don't take that toy away from that other kid. I mean, hey, folks, if you don't believe what I'm saying, go down to the local nursery and watch what goes on. Or anyone that leaves their children there when you pick them up and they get scratches all over their face. That's because, of course, people don't need to learn to do what's right. They know it automatically. I don't think so.
Well, and it is. And you mentioned that how this connection of how our country was formed, our rights and our responsibilities, and that's a very important word, responsibilities, then carries over into our life. I mean, we as a nation are really the drivers. Government is the car. We are the drivers. And we kind of take that mechanism and bring it into our kids' life. We're not raising kids. We're raising adults. And they will therein go forth and be part of this self-governing. Before we carry on, once again, you're listening to Right Here, Right Now. My name is Jeff Chittister, and we're with Pastor Garrett Lear, Well of the Living Water. And I do take your feedback, guys. I love that. And every once in a while, someone tells me, Jeff, would you read the weather every once in a while as we're listening to the show? And I will do that. I'd be glad to. Today, mostly cloudy with gradually becoming sunny with high near 34. I can't wait. Winter's over. Tonight, it's going to be clear, low around 19. And tomorrow, Valentine's Day, don't forget your loved one. Sunny with highs around 39, west winds from about 8 to 17 miles an hour. So there you go. I didn't forget to read the weather. And So one of the things you do say is, I will have no other king but King Jesus. But another one I always find interesting when I hear this, and I imagine, although at Faneuil Hall I get a round of applause, someone has stolen my country and I want her back. And you say that often, and you do explain it in your writings. For our listeners, why don't you tell us a little bit about how that came about and what you mean by that statement?
Growing up, and I was born in Lexington, Massachusetts. I could say I was born in Lexington, the Massachusetts, or I was born in the Lexington. There we go. I grew up walking by the Lexington Minuteman, but I also grew up right here at the beach in New Hampshire and hearing about live free or die and so forth. So, I mean, as a boy, I didn't really understand a lot of these things. It just sort of lodged in me like a seed being planted to grow at a later date. And so when I came to realize that what the foundation of America was, I started to make this statement just personally for myself, saying, you know, America is not the country that I was born in. What? What do you mean? You were born in Lexington in 1948. Well, but it's changed so much that I don't recognize it like the America that I was growing up in. So I thought that was just a personal statement. Then I started to remember what my mother, you know, and I always tell people, don't tell me something if you don't want me to remember it, because for some reason I remember stuff from when I was 2 years old and whatever. My mother had told me about our heritage all the way back to the Mayflower and so forth. And oh, thank you, Ma. That's really nice. You know, big deal. I'd really like to go down for an ice cream. but I started, as I got older, to think about that. Then I realized I wasn't just saying for myself, somebody stole my country. I was speaking for my ancestors as their descendant. They're not here, but I am. I'm their posterity. And that they're looking at it as saying, wait a minute, what did we fight for? We bled, we died, we paid, we went through suffering. What did we do that for? Our country's been stolen from us. And then when I started to really delve deeper into the foundational documents, and I have thousands of them in, you know, the replicas. I can't afford to have the originals, right? I mean, we talked about Abraham Lincoln's birthday. They just auctioned off one of his handwritten speeches for $3.5 million.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine that? Well, I have the reproductions, and I started to study these things and read them and say, wait a minute. You know what? America is in God we trust. Abraham Lincoln put that on our money, or inspired it. And Jesus is saying, this is my country and somebody's stolen it. An atheist has tried to steal it, a pagan, a heathen, a witch, a whatever has tried to steal it. And I want it back.
And it really is true. I mean, when I heard you say it, I knew that you weren't saying it personally. I have said it myself, and I've heard many people say that. It's not a contempt I feel for my fellow citizens.
Not at all.
It is an understanding, and you mentioned your mother talking about, you know, really your connection as a family all the way back to the Revolutionary War and before, or the War of Independence. And I think that's the start of us as citizens maintaining what the intent of this country was originally and not letting it get hijacked. Is, as parents, it is incumbent upon us to really talk to our kids and work them through and connect them to that beginning and keep that passion in them, so that we see the kind of passion that you display. And sometimes, you know, I've been accused of being very passionate for my country. We mentioned that earlier. And you mentioned Abraham Lincoln and God We Trust. And he had that point put on the coin. And this is very unique. 200 years ago, Abraham Lincoln was born yesterday. He had it put on the coin near the end of the Civil War as a unifier, as one symbol of bringing the country back together, because it was at that point, both North and South, that no matter whether you were North or South, you had this belief in God. You had this connection to God, and that was a unifier of this nation. And somehow now that In God We Trust has become a divider, which is unfortunate.
Well, you know, I give a challenge to my Christian brethren. Have you hugged an atheist today? the issue is, and it's kind of funny, a new book that's out. It's called You Can Lead an Atheist to Evidence, But You Can't Make Him Think. And the birthday of Lincoln, and where I spoke last night, I mentioned this, is also the same birthday of Charles Darwin. And Charles Darwin is no friend of humanity, I can promise you that. I mean, I always tell people laughingly, you know, when little kids look at me, I remember I was speaking in Connecticut, and this little kid came up, and he looked at me and goes, "Whoa, you're the biggest pilgrim I ever saw." You know, where I've had some people, kids look at me with a stark fear in their face, you know, because I'm 6'7" and weigh a, well, you don't need to know how much I weigh. A lot. And what did you have for breakfast this morning? I said, well, it wasn't a little kid, I can tell you that. You know, the issue is we're not trying to push our weight around. We're standing on principle.
Oh, absolutely.
On what this is and being passionate. I'm passionate about my wife. I'm passionate about my kids. I mean, one of my daughters would always say to me, well, Dad, you know, when you tell me that I'm wonderful and I did great and so forth, well, naturally, that's because you're Dad and you're just so, you know, you're so much in our corner. I said, now, wait a minute. You got to think this through. I said, when you don't do what I believe is right, when you have been lazy about something, whatever, I tell you that, too. But I said, you know what? Because I'm so passionate and I love you so much, you remember that much more than the criticisms. Well, it's the same thing for our country. I mean, I am certainly aware of some of the shortcomings of America. But at the same time, I don't want people walking around with this hangdog attitude that America's not worth fighting for, that America's not worth saving, that America's not worth loving and enjoying and so forth and so on. Because where else are we going to have these things?
Oh, absolutely. And you have to have these discussions. And you know, I would encourage everybody out there, and if the last time you read the Constitution, if it was back in high school, if you were even fortunate to have it taught to you in high school, that was too long ago. I keep pocket copies here, and we leave pocket copies out in our lobby. So stop by our lobby and pick a copy up. You've got to read this document constantly. You got to have it with you constantly. And you know, I spend my July 4th morning reading the Declaration of Independence, rereading it, and thinking
about that too.
And it really is important because it reconnects you back to our birthright and what people have fought for.
We had a number of people gather at my house over 4th of July, and I said, "Okay, folks, I know you're all hungry and you smell the hamburgers and the beans and everything else, but you're not having anything to eat until I read you this." And we read the Declaration. I said, I'm going to go easy on you. I'm just going to read a few portions of it. But I want to read a quote here, Jeff, from our sixth president, John Quincy Adams, and he certainly knew what he was talking about. He said, "The highest glory of the American Revolution was this. It connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government with the principles of Christianity. From the day of the Declaration, they, the American people, were bound by the laws of God, which they all, and by the laws of the gospel, which they nearly all acknowledge as the rules of their conduct." If anybody understood what it was about, that man, John Quincy Adams, was raised by his dad, John Adams, second president, and Abigail Adams, great human beings, great Americans, great patriots, great Christians, but they weren't really available to their children quite as much as they would have liked to. Just the same as myself, along the way, I have tried to balance things out, to spend as much time with my wife and my kids as possible. I actually had a few times where my kids said, "You know, Dad, you spend so much time with us. Why don't you take your golf clubs and go golfing or go fishing or something? You know, you deserve to have a little time for yourself." And I realized, well, then I've accomplished my objective here. I mean, I don't want to put anything else except God before my family, and the Lord has told me to take care of your family. So our country, you know, we call it our homeland. I mean, you notice when I say someone has stolen my country and I want her back.
Right.
I don't say it back. Our country is in the female gender, even the way that the Bible talks about the church being in the female gender. The bride of Christ is a she, is a her. And so we could say this is our motherland in that sense, and I feign to use things like that because it was so much wronged with Hitler in Germany, the fatherland, and all
right.
That kind of stuff, which I certainly am way, way far against all that stuff. But the idea of saying this country has been good to me, even when it's been bad to me. And it's been more good to me than it's been bad to me.
And I think a lot of people fail to grasp that concept. And especially now when we're dealing with many different crises, there's this sense of disconnect. As you said, you know, that embracing of America starts by not calling it it, but embracing it as a living being, or at least a living entity that helps us move forward as individual citizens. I did want to play one other clip from your speech down at Faneuil Hall. I love this clip, and just kind of get your reaction from this.
And what he was believing and what he taught, that resistance to tyranny, and please listen to this carefully, resistance to tyranny he considered to be obedience to God. For as free men and Christians to fight... For Christians and free men to fight for their birthright of liberty and the altars of their religion on that glorious day and bloody day of April 1775.
Now, I love the audience reaction, and we're going to encourage people to go to the web and see that video because it was really very inspiring. Everyone stood up, and they really connected with what you said. And that was actually a statement made by, I believe, a pastor, Jonas Clark, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, you're really talking about a connection of the pulpit to our War of Independence. And a lot of people think now that religion doesn't have a place in government to guide government, to instruct government, or to its people sitting in the pews to tell them anything other than, you know, just a few passages from the Bible. But in that statement, you really explain how there was a connection and really how the pulpit led the War of Independence. And why don't you talk a little bit about that?
The reason our country's in the mess that it's in and certain messes that it's in is because the church has not addressed these issues. And see, when we look at the spheres of authority, so to speak, and we look at jurisdictions, there's the church and there's the state. And, of course, there's the individual who has a certain sovereignty. Those inalienable rights, incidentally, and those constitutional rights don't belong to actually to businesses. They're to the people. And you had mentioned about getting the people to read the Constitution. Tell people if you can't read the whole thing, at least start off with the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments.
Absolutely.
Because let me tell you, nobody in the world has that but us. And we need to keep that. That protects us from a tyrannous government. So those, and you mentioned Jonas Clark, the Patriot pastor, and you asked early on, why do they call me the Patriot pastor?
Exactly.
Well, first of all, because I have this heritage. There are very few people in America that have 388 years of ancestry. I mean, there's many that are Mayflower descendants. Many of them are either ashamed to say it or don't bring it up or whatever else. But I have the ancestry. I have the knowledge and the understanding and a lifelong study, but also because I pattern my ministry and what I preach and teach after the early New Testament church and the Black Robe Regiment, or the Black Regiment, they known either way, the Colonial Currixes of the War for American Independence. Samuel Adams, for example, and John Hancock sat under the ministry of Jonathan Mayhew. You read the man's preaching, and you understand what Scripture says, that judgment comes first to the house of God. Many of God's people in America were better prepared then for what they were dealing with, because they were hearing, this is your mandate that the Lord has given you to do this. These are your, and you early on said this, Jeff, and it's very important because you connected the two together, rights and responsibilities. Now, everybody wants to know about getting paid. Everybody wants to know that, you know, dessert. But hey, if mom's feeding you liver tonight, you got to eat the liver before you get the dessert. The rights come with responsibilities. And I honor that, and I'm glad of it, because a mature person says, yes, I have rights, but I have responsibilities, and I'm glad to honor my responsibilities, that word honor. So that statement of saying standing against tyrants, let me tell you something. As a pastor, and I've been in ministry about 35 years, there were times where people did things or tried to do things to my wife and my children. And I said, let me tell you something. That's my wife that God gave me. Those are my children that God gave me. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up your child in the way of the Lord, and when he's old, he won't depart. And that's my responsibility. It's my right, privilege, and responsibility. And I combined right and privilege in there, which seems like a contradiction. Just saying, it is. I consider it an honor. I should say it that way, an honor to be able to do that. And I tell people, you try to harm them, and I'm going to step in the middle, and I'm going to intervene, and I'm going to say, you're going to eat them? Eat me first. Come through me. This is the kind of responsibility that we should have, to stand up for what is right and recognize in the common vernacular, I'll take the hit. That's what those patriot pastors were doing. And how many of our Americans know Ralph Waldo Emerson's poem about the Concord Bridge? But what they don't know is that his grandfather was a Black Robe Regiment. He was one of those patriot pastors named William Emerson. He died at Fort Ticonderoga. He was at the bridge in Concord handing muskets up to a rifleman in a tree. Now, that's pretty hard. I mean, I'm a man of peace. The thought of taking the life of anything, and incidentally, I have a hard time even putting a mouse trap out. I mean, I'm serious. I have no desire to see anyone die. At the same time, I recognize that there are times where there has to be an intervention. So those patriot pastors were considered the most formidable enemy of King George III, that tyrant. And he wanted them dead.
And, you know, and I think at some point we have to invite you back just to talk about that period of time and really get into the Black Robe Regiment. What I thought was interesting is that, you know, studying for the show and reading even further some of the things I hadn't realized is that one of the things that became very clear to me is the belief then, and as it should be now, and it's not opinion, it certainly is in the writings, is that it is our moral obligation as sons and daughters of America to fight tyranny, to oppose tyranny, and really fight for liberty. And once again, I have to go back that we don't do that now. The word tyranny and liberty are thrown about very casually, and it's unfortunate.
Well, if you were to look in, for example, Black's Law Dictionary, there's quite a number of definitions there for liberty. One of them is freedom from restraint. There's natural liberty, civil liberty, political liberty, religious liberty. Liberty is a good thing, but it does come with responsibilities. God is not imposing his will on us. He has a will. And what I tell people, you don't have to obey God's will. And they say, what? You're a preacher. You're saying I don't have to obey God's will? I said, no, you don't have to obey God's will. But you have to be willing to take the responsibility for what happens to you when you don't obey God's will. Just the same as today, and I explain it this way. I could be a really good tyrant. I mean, I actually, you know, I graduated military academy. I was trained special forces military and so forth and so on. I could be a really good tyrant, and I'm big enough to be one. And even in my 61st year of life, I do a little working out. I can probably beat arm wrestling, and this is not a challenge, guys, so don't come up to me on the street. You know, beat a lot of guys arm wrestling. I could probably impose my will on a lot of people, but I'm not a tyrant. But I do want people to know that when you have decided to go against what God has ordained, there's a responsibility for that. As individuals, and also as nations, there's such a thing as judgment. Just the same as, hey, you can go out. I'm going to tell everyone, by the way, folks, you can go right out on 95 right now, and you can go 95. You can look at that. I mean, that's the posted speed limit, isn't it? U.S. 95 is speed limit 95. Go out and do it. You can do it. You're free to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
And the state police are free to stop you and give you a ticket for 95 miles an hour in a 65 zone, and you're going to pay very handsomely for that. because there's a responsibility. You got the right to do it, but you also have to have the responsibility.
Right, and that's we're getting ready to close up. And once again, we've been talking with Pastor Garrett Lear, Well of the Living Water, and we're going to go to We the People segment. When we come back, and we'll talk about some of the events that you have coming up, and we're going to invite you back to the show to talk about other things. But what is interesting is that, you know, we talk freedom and we talk liberty, and all too often freedom becomes this undisciplined understanding of our commitment to our country. Believe me when I say that our founding fathers, if you read their documents and if you really study their history, did not believe that we were free to do whatever we wanted. There were certain things that we are endowed by our Creator, and that's really what they were talking about, moving us forth as a nation. And kind of in that statement, what I'd like to do is, as I promised, We the People, this We the People segment, and we've actually had a few people give us some great segments. So over the next few weeks, you're going to hear more of our We the People. But I thought today what we would do is, yesterday we celebrated Abraham Lincoln's birthday, 200 years since his birth. And then we're also going to be celebrating President's Day on Monday. And all too often in this time of really vote harvesting and gathering support for our political causes, every political machine tries to take credit for a president because the people really feel that compassionate towards them. And what I want to do is I want to play Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And here's the thing, a little over 200 words, a little less than 3 minutes to say it. And there's so much power in his words. And listen very carefully to the end of what he was trying to say.
Fourscore and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here, dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
You know, and the interesting thing is when I pulled that audio and I've read those words so many times before, I actually get choked up when I hear them. It's very profound, and I think that, you know, Abraham Lincoln was a president, but he was America's president, and he spoke so profoundly of the cause that was important at that time, the unity of America. But he also was very careful to remind everybody that we were really one nation under God. It was important at that time to do what we did for our country. And any comments when you hear that speech?
I mean, it chokes me up.
Yeah.
Because it says in a very short frame what America's about. And also, I think about in the world, who has ever said that? What other leader of government in any other part of the world has said that? A government of the people, for the people, and by the people. Now, I understand that that is, seems idealistic as we look at the circumstances today, that we obviously are not having that.
Right.
But that is what we're supposed to be. And how are we going to restore the republic if we don't know what the republic's supposed to be? You can't restore something that you don't understand the original plan. And you earlier said about liberty. The what many people call liberty today is license. And I'm going to give a challenge to our readers today. Excuse me, to our listeners to do some reading is what I meant to say. Much of what people call liberty is really license or licentiousness. They're not libertarians. They're libertines. Go to the dictionary and look up libertine and see if you are one. If you are, change your ways.
Very good. If people want to find out more about you, you have a website. And how can they visit that website?
Thewelloflivingwater.com or thepatriotpastor.org. Either of those two will find me. Or, as you earlier said, Google search and pulls up. I mean, I'm listed in the phone book. I mean, my address is on my house.
And they also, you have a couple of events coming up that they can visit to see you. And what are some of those events? Tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Yep, tomorrow evening at Haynes Hill Road. Actually, if you go to our website and look on the outreach page, gives contact information for all of those events.
Oh, very good. And there are a lot of great events that you can see the pastor at. Once again, we've been talking to Pastor Garrett Lear, the Patriot Pastor. We're going to have him back on, but it's time for us to make way for the Uncle Phil Show. And before we leave, I'd like to read something to you. Liberty lies in the heart of men and women. It dies there. No constitution, no law, no court can save it. No constitution, no law, no court can even do much to help it. When it lies there, it needs no constitution, no law, no courts to save it. And that was Judge Learned Hand. And this has been Right Here, Right Now. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Next week, we're going to have a bunch of different guests on, and we're going to talk about all the things that are going on in the state as far as the budget. And we're also going to be talking about the stimulus plan. Don't forget, you still have time to stop this thing. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. There are too many things that are in doubt about this stimulus plan that we cannot let it go forward. In fact, earlier this week, our own representative, the Representative Carol Shea Porter, admitted that she had not read it. And yet she is going to vote for it. So I would encourage all of you to really try to prevent this thing from going forward until at least it has a chance to be heard in a public forum. This has been Right Here, Right Now. Uncle Phil is up next.